7BR Part Heard. Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We welcome back today a previous guest of the podcast, Peter Egwe, who is here to discuss a recent piece of news in relation to Bitcoin and the island of Bekwe, who are establishing a purely Bitcoin-based community in the face of de-risking by international banks. Peter's criminal practice is centered on the defense of serious crime, fraud, and cybercrime. He specializes in complex paper and data-heavy cases and regularly acts in matters of the utmost legal and factual complexity. He holds a legal education certificate from Norman Manley Law School, Jamaica, and is eligible to practice across multiple jurisdictions in the Commonwealth Caribbean. Peter is particularly interested in the intersection of technology and law, recognizing that the vast majority of cybercrime matters never result in a criminal charge. His experience and ability in crime and offshore matters make him well-placed to tackle and advise on a wide range of cybercrime, civil fraud, and regulatory matters. Peter, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Rhys.
So we're here today to discuss a small piece of news that fell across our laps this week in relation to the island of Bekwe. In short, the island is considering becoming establishing a Bitcoin-based community as a result of de-risking by international banks. Now, before we go into what all of this means, perhaps you could start off by just giving us a brief outline of what Bitcoin is and how it works.
Okay, well, the question is partly technological, but I like to think of it actually more as a philosophical question. For example, did you know that the new £1 coin is 23.43 millimeters in diameter? I'm guessing your answer is no. And neither did I till I Googled it about 15 minutes ago, right? And you might ask me, well, why, Peter, how could you ever have spent or accepted a £1 coin without knowing that it weighs 8.75 grams precisely? And the answer is because all of the technical aspects are not as important to me as what I can actually do with it. Once I verify, or once I'm confident that the money I have in my possession is not counterfeit, I'll spend it. Bitcoin is essentially digital money. Wikipedia will tell you that money is any item or verifiable record that's generally accepted as payment for goods and services and repayment of debts. The main functions are distinguished as a medium of exchange, a unit of account, a store of value. And any item or verifiable record that fulfills these functions can be considered as money. So that's essentially it. Bitcoin, for our purposes here and for the purposes in the real world, really is digital money.
Right. I would never have thought of it in that aspect. I think that's quite an interesting way to look at it, actually. But then when we look at Bekwe and Caribbean islands, this introduction of Bitcoin isn't to be sort of the forerunner into cryptocurrency, into the crypto world, to be a pioneer. It's in part out of necessity. And as I've sort of touched upon, other Caribbean islands are doing this as well, aren't they?
Yes. So one of the things, when I was explaining about the way that Bitcoin works, it's money. And as with many other forms, of course, money works because people collectively decide to accept and trade with it and use it. In the Caribbean, obviously, there are various currencies in the Caribbean. But because of the nature of the jurisdiction, some of those currencies are dollars and euros, currencies that are minted in jurisdictions far away from the sunny tropical climate in the Caribbean. Consequently, in about 2008, a trend began where banks generally based in the US and the EU and the UK started moving out of the Caribbean jurisdictions. It's called de-risking, partly because of concerns about volatility in the smaller countries and issues in relation to regulation, anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing concerns. That trend isn't only happening in the Caribbean, but the Caribbean's one of the first places that has reacted quite swiftly to it, actually. And in early 2019, the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank decided to sign a contract to start a central bank digital currency, first time it's been done in the world. And on the, it was Friday the 13th, ominous day, this year, Dcash, which is the digital version of the Eastern Caribbean dollar, was used for the first time. It was in a transaction in a supermarket in Grenada. And that was the first time in the world that government-issued digital currency was used. It is actually legal tender. The digital version is just as real or valid as the physical Eastern Caribbean notes. But one thing to note is that unlike Bitcoin or various other cryptocurrencies, it's centralized. It's created by the central bank. It can't be mined. And that is something that distinguishes it from the cryptocurrencies more generally.
What sort of risks does this then face? I know inherently people are worried that Bitcoin won't ever take off and be normalized. I know that's a factor, a scare factor that people have, but what are the actual risks involved with transactions in this manner?
Okay, before I get to the risks precisely, it's worth touching upon some of the pros of Bitcoins and some of the cons, right? And we'll explore it. So one of the benefits of cryptocurrency, such as Bitcoin, is that the store of value, the Bitcoin, can be chopped up into infinite number of pieces and essentially sent over the internet like an email, as easily as you might send an email. That brings with it many benefits because it means that it's easy to use, it's easy to transfer, makes it difficult for somebody to unilaterally take it off you. And one of the important things is it means that a country can't inflate the currency. Bitcoin operates separately from the political desires of any particular country or economic concerns of any political country. One of the cons, or two of the cons, the first is that there's a concern that Bitcoin is being used by lay individuals generally to speculate quite wildly. But more than that is the danger in relation to the laundering of the proceeds of crime. Bitcoin and various other cryptocurrencies are clearly enabling cybercrime. The ransomware attacks that took place on the pipeline in the US the other day, unlikely to have been successfully carried out in the absence of cryptocurrency. The criminals, I heard, were paid approximately $4.4 million. Well, time will tell whether they'll be able to spend that money in peace, but there probably wouldn't have been a chance at all if they were spending old money, if they were trying to cash a $4.4 million check, for example. So looking at the pros and the cons, then lead into your question about these particular jurisdictions, the risks for Bekwe, which is situated inside St. Vincent and the Grenadines, which incidentally actually is one of the jurisdictions covered by the East Caribbean dollar and one of the jurisdictions likely to receive Dcash as legal tender in the future. One of the issues for Bekwe is that they will have a difficulty in protecting their island and their jurisdiction from the influx of criminal proceeds. And the consequence of that will potentially be the increase in prices of houses and various other things on the island, but also increased scrutiny by the US, the EU, the UK, and various other international bodies and organizations, which are committed to reducing the spread of laundered proceeds of crime, not least because of the potential for organized crime, but the potential for counter-terrorist financing. So a particular risk that a jurisdiction or an island like Bekwe will have is that by seeking to avoid the problems caused by de-risking, it won't bury the problem, it may actually exacerbate it.
Right. Now, so the reason that I sort of asked this is because I understand that part of your practice includes offshore and sort of cybercrime matters in Caribbean islands, Commonwealth Caribbean island jurisdictions. So when we take Bitcoin aside just for a moment, when you're dealing with money and assets, what are the sort of matters and issues that you come across in your practice?
Well, whether in the criminal or civil arena, parties are increasingly aware now, not only of the existence, but the value of cryptocurrencies as part of the assets that need to be looked at, investigated. There was a time, more so in my early years at the bar, where cryptocurrency wasn't even considered as worthy of investigation. Individuals could walk away from poker proceedings, divorces, with an uninspected crypto wallet that would today be worth millions of pounds, dollars, or whatever they decided to convert it into. So in practice, the issue in relation to cryptocurrencies and those sorts of assets is more that they're more likely to be part of an investigation, more likely to be a consideration, more likely to be a question that needs to be explored thoroughly before it can be put aside. And of course, that has associated complexities just because of the technical nature of the area.
Great. So you sort of led into what the follow-up to that question was going to be of, are cryptocurrencies now becoming normalized within tracing and determining whether or not it's a valuable asset to pursue?
Oh, certainly. From the point of view of an individual or business, for example, who've been subject to a fraud, because of the interconnected and international nature of financial institutions and because of the various ways in which money can flow, the person seeking to trace money doesn't really concern themselves with what that money or what the proceeds of the event converted themselves into. And what that means is that in following the trail, more often in 2021, and I suspect more often as we move through the rest of this century, part of that tracing exercise will see a point at which assets have been converted into cryptocurrency, whether that's to move them more easily or whether that's to use a cryptocurrency such as Monero to completely obscure the tracks and scupper any tracing exercise. Depends on the particular case. But cryptocurrency and crypto assets are increasingly being used. Therefore, they will increasingly come up in tracing exercises and professionals will need to be on top of things, not on top of the way purely and simply on top of the way that things are now, but also with some anticipation of the way that things will develop and the new techniques that people are using.
So given that there's this trend that seems to be emerging quite rapidly now, particularly as you say, as time is moving on and people are becoming quite comfortable in their acceptance of cryptocurrencies, what challenges do you sort of envisage arising out of this?
The challenge in respect of cryptocurrency, I see as one of widespread adoption in the face of governments who, for obvious reasons, will seek to regulate, tax, and have some oversight of an incredibly decentralized and unregulated space. In my view, the widespread adoption of cryptocurrency isn't something that is guaranteed, but as the Eastern Caribbean Bank showed recently, digital cash, digital legal tender may be the way of the future. There's many potential benefits of it. But in a sense, what the DCash project represents touches upon something I mentioned right at the beginning of this podcast, which is easy to overlook. The unique selling point of Bitcoin, for example, is that it can't be counterfeited. You can counterfeit dollars, you can counterfeit gold. The Eastern Caribbean Bank could decide to inflate DCash and enter into some quantitative easing to make some more DCash. But Bitcoin can't be counterfeited, which means that humans will spend it as long as other humans are willing to receive it. and trade in relation to it. But the primary risk is that it's also extremely difficult in respect of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, and some in respect to some cryptocurrencies, borderline impossible, to know for certain whether the cryptocurrency that's being spent has come from illegitimate sources. And that is a risk that will be extremely difficult to overcome. And bear in mind that the Bitcoin ledger is public. So if I, as an individual, receive, I don't know, 100 Bitcoin from you, I'd want to know that I can spend it or I could save it without, at some point in the future, somebody kicking down my door and saying to me, give me back that 100 Bitcoin because it doesn't belong to you. That is the primary risk as I see it practically, but also from a legal perspective, the tracing exercises will follow the cryptocurrency wherever it ends up. And that may, in certain situations, mean that cryptocurrencies ended up in the metaphorical pocket of a person who was completely unconnected with the ransomware heist that took place a year before.
So just one last question. We know the law is really slow to change, adapt, keep up with current trends and emerging trends. From a practitioner's perspective, or even from maybe a legislative perspective, how do you envisage steps to be taken, or what steps could people be taking now?
An important step is to pay attention to the regulatory landscape and the way in which it's changing. The Budapest Convention on Cybercrime, or the Budapest Convention, was something that was discussed in the third of our webinars on cybercrime. It's the first international treaty seeking to address internet and computer crime, cybercrime, by harmonizing national laws. Of recent, the EU basically published their sixth anti-money laundering directive. It came into effect for member states on 3rd of December 2020 and must be implemented by financial institutions across the EU from the 3rd of June 2021. Alongside this, the US and the UK have a new data sharing agreement, the Cloud Act, that's essentially designed to create a situation in which information in respect to investigations can flow more quickly between the US and the UK. And these are trends that are being mirrored by jurisdictions around the world. So, as I said, the regulatory landscape is changing swiftly, but either by doing the personal work required to keep on top of those changes, or by acquiring good advice in respect of whichever jurisdictions concern a practitioner, these regulatory changes need to be kept on top of, because it's a very complex situation that in the near future is likely to become more complicated still.
Thank you, Peter. This has been a very interesting discussion.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed speaking about it, and maybe in a few years we can follow up and see what happens on the island paradise of Bekwe.
Yeah, of course. Thank you to our listeners. If you enjoyed this week's episode and Peter's insight and thoughts into this novel area, you can find more like this and more from Peter, where he discussed the Law Commission's recent consultation on reform of communication offences and recently organised a series of cybercrime webinars which had a focus on cryptocurrency. You can find more details about this and the recordings on Chamber's website. To listen to our podcast, you can find these on Apple Music, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Chamber's website. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.